Hi, everyone. Welcome to my podcast, where I explore the science of health, human performance, and ultimate potential. My name is Dr. Greg Wells, and I'm a scientist with a PhD in human physiology. I have served as a professor in kinesiology at the University of Toronto and as a scientist in translational medicine at SickKids Hospital. I've also worked with dozens of Olympic-level athletes through the Canadian Sports Centre Network. In this podcast, I do my best to take complex research and make it understandable and actionable for you to improve your health and well-being and perform to your true potential at whatever it is that you care about the most. In each show, I chat with leading experts in the field of productivity, sleep, nutrition, physiology, and psychology, as well as some of the most exceptional performers across all disciplines. Together, we explore the amplifiers that propel us towards high performance and overcome the obstacles that challenge us. Ultimately, I want to share 1% gains that can make a massive difference in your life. Thank you for listening in, and I hope that you enjoy this episode. Let me know your thoughts and comments on social at Dr. Greg Wells. All right, let's dive in. Hey, everyone, welcome back. It's great to have you with me for another episode of the podcast, where each week we venture into the realms of health, well-being, and peak performance. This week, I'm honored to host Dr. Dwight Chapin. Dr. Chapin has an extensive background as an award-winning chiropractor. He's the team chiropractor for the Toronto Argonauts of the CFL, and he is a health advisor to employees at many companies, including Canada's national newspaper, The Globe and Mail. In this episode, we explore the science and stories behind the 7 wellness rituals that can elevate your life. This book serves as a playbook for anyone to unlock the secrets of sustained health and wellness. Through the lens of 21 world-class experts in different fields, including the likes of musician Jan Arden and Dragon's Den investor Jim Treliving, we explore the rituals that have paved the way for their success and well-being. Super psyched to have Dr. Dwight on the show. I've known him for many, many, many years. I think that he has a unique ability to communicate powerful ideas, but in a way that are understandable and actionable, which is one of the main reasons why, of course, we're having him on this show. So without any further delays, please enjoy my conversation with Dr. Dwight Chapin, all about the 7 wellness rituals. Dr. Dwight, thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure, Greg. Good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you too. I am coming to you from the side of the road right now, from a campground on the side of the highway. Clearly, it looks like I've caught you at work, which is amazing. And super psyched to talk to you. Your new book is out, 7 Wellness Rituals. I'm so excited to get into it, but maybe you could just give everyone a bit of background about your background, your expertise, how you landed on all of this and what led to you writing the book.
Sure. So I'm a chiropractor, practice in Mississauga, Ontario, and next year marks my 25th year in practice. And I do wear many hats. So I have a family practice, but I'm also the on-site clinician for the Globe and Mail, and I'm the team chiropractor for the Toronto Argonauts. And I've always been passionate about self-care, helping people craft a formula for self-care that will advance not just health, but also performance. And when we got to the end of 2020, I noticed a huge shift in patients' mindset. People were coming to me with a sense of frustration and purpose and a desire to really move their self-care strategy in a different direction. They wanted to come out of the pandemic with purpose and meaning, and they wanted to feel better, move better, think better, just be better. And so it was an opportunity to bring the science of self-care to life. And I thought the best way to do that would be to write a book about best practices, but share stories of those of individuals who walk the walk, who really have crafted a formula for self-care that would stand as a good example for the rest of Canadians. And I'm very proud to say that, Greg, you're in that book.
Thank you.
You joined that group of mentors that we pulled together for this project.
Yeah, no, I was super honored to be a part of it. And obviously to, just be associated with some of the people in the book is so cool. I'm so deeply grateful for that. Now, obviously, we get to share that with all of the people who listen to this, which is amazing. But tell me about someone else, not me. Tell me about someone else that was inspiring and why they inspired you and what you learned from them.
Right. So what I wanted to do with the mentors that I brought to the table in this project was first of all, I wanted to get a group of individuals that were from a variety of different industries, right? So we have leaders from business, sport, media, entertainment, healthcare, education, a variety of different ages and backgrounds. And I wanted to showcase that these aren't masters of clean living. Like, these are people that have lived messy lives and had to figure it out. And what I'm really passionate about, and one of the lessons and take homes for me in this project, was just how these individuals craft their formula and work at it. And I mean, it's almost one of their greatest assets and greatest points of pride in achieving good health and success, the effort and the deliberate intention that they bring to bringing their formula together was really inspiring for me. So, you know, I have Jim Treelivings in the book, Philip Crawley, publisher, CEO of the Globe and Mail in the book, Silken Lauman, Olympic rowers in the book, Jim Leach, former president of Ontario Teachers Pension, Pinball Clemens, Jan Arden. I mean, so there's a real mix of individuals that really opened up their lives to me and showcased not just their approach to self-care, but their discipline to that practice and how they prepare and recover from peak performance events.
Isn't it interesting that, like, straight away you, like, are into, hey, it's messy, it's a process, it's a practice. It's not like it's perfect at the end. Like, this is something that people work on. Some days are good, some days are maybe not as successful, but it's all part of crafting this life. I love that that's like your key takeaway that you launched right into.
I think that people need to give themselves a sense of not just purpose, but forgiveness and kindness in their approach to self-care. Like, a lot of the practices that we talk about in the book, you know, they're not rocket science. Like, we need better quality sleep. We need to prioritize our rest and recovery. We need to look at how diet influences our health and performance and risk of disease. And how do we manage energy? How do we move? How do we practice resistance training and mental fitness? And how do we bring play into our life? I mean, these are all concepts that most people can appreciate. The difference, Greg, is that we've got to convert these practices from habits into rituals. And so what's the purpose? What's going to get you off the couch to go for a walk after dinner with your spouse or your neighbor? Are you chasing a movement tracker or daily count? Or is it because you've got a family history of heart disease that you want a higher performance level? So regardless of whatever your motivation is, it's the conversion to linking these practices into a hardwired approach in your day-to-day routine. And I think you need to fall down enough to figure out exactly what your body needs and figure that process out. I mean, all of the mentors told me that it's taken time to figure it out. So I wrote this book to try to help accelerate the reader's experience in crafting a formula that's built on best practices and the evidence that supports it.
Can you give us an example of shifting from basically going from not just a habit, but to an actual ritual? Maybe we'll pick sleep or nutrition, but how do we do that? How do we, you know, make this a part of our lives? And give us an example of what that process looks like.
Sure. So when I sat down with Jim Treelivings and talked to him about his process, I mean, his early formula was work hard, love your work, period. Like, that was the extent of it. He loved his work. When he was building the Boston Pizza empire, he just would outwork everybody, and he had tremendous success early on with that approach. But of course, that's not sustainable. And so it literally almost killed him, and he was forced to take a hard look at his formula. Now, of course, he has a very robust formula that practices all of these seven wellness rituals that are in the book. And so for Jim, one of the priorities that he had to figure out was ritual, I call ritual one, and that's prioritizing sleep, rest, and recovery. And so if you're coming to sleep and your perspective of sleep is that it's an inconvenience, that if I'm chasing my to-do list and I just can push through a little harder, a little longer, then I might just get a little bit more done today. And so I'm a little bit more tired tomorrow. And that practice over the long term, as you well know, leads to insufficient sleep syndrome and is linked to all kinds of chronic health issues. And so the conversion of using sleep to your advantage to boost health and away from sleep being this idea of some type of inconvenience or time suck, it starts with understanding what does sleep do for us from a biological perspective? How is it that with sleep, the brain detoxifies and actually gets rid of memory impairing proteins and elevates cognitive function and creativity and elevates mood and supports immune function and helps us regulate our weight? And so when we understand the biology behind what sleep does to lift our health, then all of a sudden the why behind the practices to make healthy sleep a more of a ritualized practice, it gets a little easier. Like there's a little more weight behind the decision. So, okay, to get my nervous system firing properly, I'm going to start winding down an hour before I want to be asleep. I understand the purpose and the influence that calming my nervous system down has on my ability to not only get the amount of sleep I need, but the depth of sleep that I need. So it's kind of a roundabout answer to your question, but I guess the purpose I'm trying to make it is that I want people to understand their physiology and the power that their choices have, their daily choices have on their physiology. And when you understand how the body works, it becomes a little bit easier to prioritize the ritualization of these practices.
You know, quite often we hear about these people and we associate them with success. And, you know, we have listeners from all over the world, but let me tell you, like everyone that who's mentioned is like an epic musician, an epic athlete, an epic business person here in Canada. And what I'm curious about is what they thought about or how they approached mental health, because I know that it doesn't matter how success, quote unquote, successful that you are, people have been struggling. And I know that so many people listening to this podcast have reached out and asked for more interviews about mental health, and let's talk about mental health. And I believe that we need to do that. So what did you discover around optimizing mental health? What practices maybe, you know, seem to be a consistent pattern, or what did you discover around that?
So I thought that this is another one of the key takeaways in the book was that all 21 of the mentors featured, they all had a very clear understanding of where they were operating on with respect to their stress response curve. So they had developed a talent to use stress to elevate performance when needed. So this idea of stress can be enhancing, it can elevate performance, we can improve cognitive, mental health, and physical health and performance when we tap into that stress response and stay on the left side of the curve or that stress response curve. But they also understand that they're going to hit their peak. And so again, physiologically, what does that look and feel like? What are the early triggers that indicate that performance is starting to tap out or reach their plateau? And then they will strategically create a rest and recovery period so that they can reset to position themselves yet again for another peak performance event. And so it's all right, how do you feel when you're at your best? How long can you sustain that peak? How long do you need to dial it back and be able to push forward again? And so everyone's formula there or experience with that change in elevation and performance, decline in performance, it's different, of course, but you can train your mind and body to recognize those symptoms and then deliberately pull yourself into the stress response at times when you need to. So there was consistency there. There was a very deliberate and intentional use of stress to elevate performance. But I think the difference is that these folks had figured out just exactly how to manipulate their physiology and prepare themselves for peak event by queuing up sleep, by queuing up the nutritional practices that they need before and after a peak event, by carving time out to process the event before strategically pushing themselves through. I mean, you talked to me about the value of just going for a walk after a peak performance event to collect your thoughts and dial your physiology down. That's you working yourself back down the stress response curve so you're strategically ready to go again if need be.
Yeah, it's really interesting that post-event protocol has almost become more important for me than the pre-event protocol, to be honest. Even like right now, you know, I had three events this morning, and I already can feel the adrenaline, you know, leaving my system, and I've got to have a plan in place for making sure that there's healthy fuel on board to make sure that that adrenaline crash, that insulin rush crash, is not going to lead to some patterns that maybe aren't serving me in the long term. So I really appreciate that these people apply a lot of intention to the practices that they put into place in and around performance moments to enable them to perform well, but maintain their mental health at the same time. Does that make sense? Am I reading that the right way?
Yeah. And they're not chasing success and then trying to figure out, well, where the self-care fits in, right? Mm. Like, Greg, one of the things that you shared with me that I've shared with many people is your 1-2-3 rule. So 1 hour a day, 2 days a month, 3 weeks a year, you put that in your calendar and you are off the grid. You are working on prioritizing your self-care by putting that practice in. So I start my day every day with a movement ritual, and that just connects my mind and my body, and it makes me feel physically strong, but also mentally ready to tap into the day. And I end my day with a 10-minute meditative practice. So those are my bookends of self-care every day. That's not a serious time commitment, but it's how I show up in my day and make sure that I'm investing in self-care, and that I work my fitness and my nutrition and my movement practices in and around that as it relates to my job and where I am in the world. But there's this commitment to bringing self-care first. Dr. Robin talks about it not being selfish, it's science.
Yeah, exactly. I love that line. It's not selfish, it's science. You're like, oh, okay, carry on.
Right.
You speak about play, and that's something that's come up quite a bit recently. I've heard it from a number of different people, and I love the fact that we're giving ourselves permission to have fun, and that that's actually part of the conversation around high performance. Like, how cool is that?
Right. Yeah. And it's often the first thing that goes, right, when we get busy. And it's a real mistake. You know, when we incorporate play, we really shift not only our mental health and mood, but the research shows that we have a significant impact on the quality and the health of our relationships, people that are the most important to us in our life. And so when, again, we're looking for opportunities to bring a smile or laughter to our relationships and to our work colleagues and to our clients and patients and the individuals that we're speaking to in podcasts like this, I mean, smiles are contagious, and the ripple effect of positivity with respect to health and performance is undeniable. You know, simply having one thing in your calendar every month that you look forward to spend time with someone that you enjoy spending time with, doing something that's perhaps a little bit unpredictable. And offline is a wonderful added component to self-care strategy.
Yeah, I just love having fun, right? Like, just doing stuff that's fun. Today during one of the talks, I showed a video of my daughter rock climbing, and she goes up and she hustles her way to the, you know, the top, and she touches the top and she rappels back down, and she lands, places her feet on the ground, and turns around and looks at me and the camera and just is beaming in happiness.
Yeah.
And my gosh, we need so much more of that in our lives right now.
Yeah. You know, I'll share a quick story with you. And this is in the book. On one of the days I was writing the chapter on play, I got into a tough part of the chapter and I wasn't sure how I wanted to move forward. And I was running late to get to a friend's barbecue. So wanted to get the chapter done, wasn't going to happen. So I walked away from my computer and I went off to this barbecue, and it's in the back of my mind, right? Trying to work through this tough section, and get to the backyard, and my friend's 3-year-old son comes up to the group of adults in the backyard, and he grabs my hand and he says, "Let me show you the potato bugs." And I didn't, this boy's name's Gavin. I didn't know Gavin. I just knew from stories his dad had shared with me that he was really curious little kid. And so I followed his lead, and he walks me down this garden path in the back of their backyard. And he goes to this big boulder and he lifts this boulder up, and underneath this boulder are these 3 potato bugs and a slug. And he's just like, his mind is blown that these bugs are still there. And he's sharing this like universe that he had discovered with me. And isn't this like totally cool? And his, to your point, like the smile and the expression of love and joy and wonder and curiosity on his face just captures this chapter. So like, as you move through your day, whether you're practicing gratitude, whether you're practicing just being still, if you're practicing just the idea of stress can be enhancing, it doesn't have to be debilitating. If we start recognizing what our stress triggers are and making a conscious choice to react or not to react, we can find joy and curiosity and wonder in our days that I think a lot of people are missing. And the research around the ripple effect that this has on our health and risk of disease is overwhelming. So having fun and playing and tapping into positivity is a powerful tool.
I'm going to challenge you a little bit. You talk about movement for longevity, but you also talk about protecting your strength. And one of the classic, you know, discussion points in physiology over the years is cardio or weights.
Yeah.
Alex Hutchinson even wrote a book about that particular topic. So I'm going to throw that out at you. You have to pick one. Cardio or weights? What are you doing and why?
Well, I would answer that question with it depends. If you're 40 plus, resistance training has to be in your formula. And by doing some resistance training, you're also going to get a significant boost in cardiovascular health, but you're also going to help to limit the muscle loss that is associated with disuse and aging. But there are other advantages too, obviously, to cardiovascular health and disease prevention by making sure you're working in some cardiovascular training. So it would depend on sort of the life stage and circumstance of the individual. Was at, of course, I tell my patients that I'd like to see a little bit of both. When it comes to movement practices, I think if we could break up the idea of fitness needs to belong in this bubble of a 30-minute spin class or a 30-minute Pilates class, and like, how can we get away from that idea and just incorporate movement, regular varied movement in our day? And if that varied movement is a combination of activity that elevates heart rate, but also challenges physical strength, balance, coordination, movement. These things have a profound effect when coupled together. I find that we can get further along as opposed to going all in one camp or the other.
Yeah, I know. I love that. And obviously that is the correct answer. It does depend. And at different life stages and even different times of the year, you can shift your focus and get some tremendous gains regardless. What are you working on these days? Like, you've done this work, you've interviewed these people, you've broken it down, you've created the structures, but what's top of mind for you? Like, what are you working on? How are you applying this to your own life? Because you're busy, you have a business, you have a lot's going on. So what's going on with you?
Right. So, you know, I have to share when I met with these 21 individuals, it was one of the best years of my life. I mean, I honestly felt like it was a masterclass in life. Like, with every conversation I had with these individuals, I was just like learning all of these gems. And I think the timing of when I was writing this book, most of the mentors were themselves in isolation or at home in the early days of the COVID pandemic. And so it gave me a very unique access to their lives at a time when they were wanting to share. And I was also coming through the first 6 months of managing my practice in COVID, which was a very high stress time. Patients were coming in with all kinds of different things that typically would not find their way into my office or would have been triaged higher up the chain. So in applying the lessons learned, the 7 wellness rituals to my life, my focus was one on making sure that I was dealing appropriately with my family history of heart disease and elevated cholesterol. I had become quite complacent in my fitness routine and somewhat cocky that I had it figured out. And when I had testing done just in advance of my 50th birthday, I realized that my genetics had a good hold of my cholesterol levels and I needed to make some radical changes to my stress management in my practice, to my sleep rituals, and to how I was, the choices I was making with food, as well as with training, to get my cholesterol back in check. And I'm very proud to say that after 18 months of working on my formula, my cholesterol levels are at an all-time low and I am no longer at risk. So fact, I had a discussion with my cardiologist, and he said, you know, Dwight, I don't get to have these conversations very often, but I want to congratulate you. You know, you've renewed my faith in primary prevention. So when you ask what I'm all about right now and what's motivating me, it's really about sparking conversations of the value and the importance of self-care, and just how important it is for us to recognize the power our choices have on health and performance. And that's why conversations like this and your podcast and your reach, Greg, is just so important.
Well, I really appreciate that. And I really appreciate you taking the time to share your wisdom with, you know, the people that hang out here with me every week. And it means the world to have people like you in my life and, you know, the, just to share wisdom. So it's super cool. Not to mention the fact that your business partner is Dr. Emily, and she's a big part of my experience growing up and coaching athletes and stuff like that. So
very cool.
It's a great big family, and super happy to have had you here to talk about your book. Where can people find out more and connect with you online?
Sure. So the book is called Take Good Care: 7 Wellness Rituals for Health, Strength, and Hope. It's available in Intigo at stores across the country, or online, or on Amazon. And you can find more information at 7wellnessrituals.com.
That's great. Thank you so much, Doc. I really appreciate it. Great to speak to you. Really appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us.
Yeah, you bet, Greg. All the best.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Dr. Greg Wells Podcast. If you found this show informative and helpful, check out my blog at drgregwells.com for additional insights and resources on health and human performance. I update the blog a couple times a month. To stay up to date on the latest tips, articles, and videos, be sure to follow me on social at Dr. Greg Wells. My goal on social is to keep your health and wellness and positivity at the forefront of your mind, and so I would be thrilled to connect with you there. If you found this episode helpful, please consider subscribing to the podcast. That helps us out a ton. And leave a review. Your feedback is greatly appreciated and helps me to continue to produce valuable content that's relevant to all of you. Please feel free to share this episode with your friends and community. That helps a ton as well. And that brings this week's show to an end. I look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Have a great week, everyone.